This morning, we continue on our series called A New Testament. And in this series, we basically explore familiar passages in the Bible. And we re-look at them, we ask God, what is it that you want to teach us anew? And today, I've titled the sermon, Our Journeys of Faith. And I'm not sure if you can guess what passage we'll be talking about today. But we'll be looking at Hebrews 11. And if you're familiar with that passage, you would know that it talks a lot about the various people of faith in the entire Bible. But we will look at it later, okay? If you're not familiar, it's okay. No worries. Before we start, I wanted to ask you, what is faith? I mean, we say we're a community of faith, people of faith, but what is faith? This is a question we grapple with at various points in our lives. And the longer our journey, I suspect, the more questions come up. And we grapple with what faith means to us in a multitude of ways. And sometimes people end up losing their faith, right? Because they no longer see its relevance in our lives. And we see that to be very true in our day and age, right? Many people decide, I don't think my faith means anything anymore. Or I have a lot of problems with my faith and I think, yeah, it's something I cannot continue to have and to be in. So for some people, they lose their faith. Perhaps for some of us, we're in a space currently where your faith or what you thought was your faith is being deconstructed. And we use that word a lot sometimes in our church because many of us have had experiences with our past churches, we had sometimes painful experiences with our past churches, is questioned a lot about what we believe in God and in the world and in us and what we're supposed to be. And so, along the way, our faith is deconstructed due to our experiences with the church or with a deeper understanding of theology. And then it takes away all the false dichotomies. It takes away all the simple black and whites that we've been exposed to. So maybe you're asking yourself, what's happening to my faith? Or at least what I thought was my faith. Is there a way to rebuild and reframe my spirituality and figure out who God is to me and what faith actually means? Perhaps for some of us, we struggle with something else, something different. Perhaps for some of us, your faith is being challenged by a difficult situation that you're going through right now. And you're asking, can I still trust and lean on God when everything else seems to be falling apart and God seems so far away? I don't know if God even cares. We all grapple with faith in different ways. And I wanted us to take some time today to reflect on our own journeys of faith and perhaps explore a little deeper regarding where we are and where we want to be. But before we go any further, I wanted to read the lectionary passage for you today. It comes from Hebrews 11. It says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith our ancestors received approval. By faith, we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to set out for a place that he was to receive as inheritance, and he set out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to the city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, he received power of procreation, even though he was too old, and Sarah herself was barren, because he considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one person, and this one, as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven, and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. All of these died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. They confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For people who speak in this way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land that had left behind, they have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, God has prepared a city for them. We often use the terms faith and belief synonymously, right? If you ask people, what's faith? They say, belief. And we go to the next slide. But is faith a set of beliefs or is it a way of life? You see, belief and faith are very different. Belief is conviction in a proposition, right? Having a sense of certainty that something is true or trustworthy. Faith, on the other hand, cannot be reduced to just mere beliefs or thoughts. As David Banner says, faith welcomes unknowing and mystery. In faith, there is mystery. There is a part of us not knowing, not being able to see. Unfortunately, Christianity has settled for dogma, rituals, and tribal belonging, losing sight of the transformative way of faith. You see, as we read Hebrews 11, we see that the writer of Hebrews lists out examples of people of faith, many of them. I only read out the one about Abraham, but if you go through the whole chapter of chapter 11, you'll see many of them. And we look carefully, we realize that faith is defined by their actions and way of life. Abraham obeyed, set out for, stayed, looked forward, received power. Faith is defined by one's actions and way of life. And for those of us who may be struggling with the deconstruction of your faith or what you think was your faith, I wanted to share with you what Brian McLaren says. For centuries, Christianity has been presented as a system of beliefs. That system of beliefs has supported a wide range of unintended consequences, from colonialism to environmental destruction, subordination of women, to stigmatization of LGBT people, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, clergy, pedophilia to white privilege. What would it mean for Christians to rediscover their faith, not as a problematic system of beliefs, but as a just and generous way of life, rooted in contemplation and expressed in compassion, that makes amends for its mistakes and is dedicated to beloved community for all? Could Christians migrate from defining their faith as a system of beliefs to expressing it as a loving way of life? So if you're feeling like your faith is kind of being deconstructed and you're kind of worried about that, I just wanted to say, relax. This may not be a bad thing. If you're having questions about faith, it's okay. It may not be a bad thing. Perhaps God is doing something new with all of us and helping us step away from the concept that faith is a system of beliefs that we must subscribe to or not subscribe to. Faith is so much more than that. It's so much more than that. Faith is a loving way of life, rooted in contemplation and expressed in compassion. You know, interestingly, Jesus called himself the way, right? The way, the truth, the life, the way. And his followers called themselves followers of the way. Did you know that? The first generation Christians called themselves followers of the way. They understood that following Jesus was walking a path, not merely adopting a religion or a set of beliefs. And that's why I chose to title the sermon today, Our Journeys of Faith. It is the way. It is us following the way. The first generation of Christians were very clear that they were following Jesus, and they knew the profound changes in their lives as a result of following Jesus. They knew they had signed on for a journey that involved experiencing and walking a path of transformation. I just want to read this one part to you that David Banner wrote, and I thought it was very challenging in some ways about how we look at religion and about faith and beliefs. He said, religions lose their way when they focus primarily on the transmission and defense of beliefs and the cultivation of belonging that occurs around these circles of belief. Christians also do this when they settle for beliefs rather than personal knowing. Nothing is more important for the future of Christianity than the recovery of the transformational path that lies at its heart. Because at the heart of Christianity, at the heart of following Christ, is actually transformation. The Christian path leads to the healing of our separate or individual self through a realization of our union with God. This is the way our small ego self is transformed into our infinitely expansive and inclusive Christ self, us in Christ. This is the way in which we return to our home in God and then live out of this home with abundance of life and wisdom, the issues from our depths when we are aligned with our source. Next slide. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. The Christian way involves the transformation not just of individuals, but of communities, of cultures, and the world. Christians understand that God is at work in the world, making all things new in Christ. And a part of the Christian path is taking our place alongside God and others as we serve others and the world by participating in this work of cosmic restoration, or shalom. So what I'm saying is this. Firstly, I'm not saying that theological beliefs are not important. I'm not saying having a system of beliefs is not important. I'm not saying that. Theological beliefs, what we believe of God, is important. And we are constantly growing and evolving in our understanding of who God is and our place in this world. If you can go to the next slide, Raymond. What I'm saying is that faith is based on much more than knowledge. Yes, knowledge forms the foundation, so it's important. But faith is not just based on how much you know about God, the Bible, the study of theology. Faith is knowing the one in whom we place our trust in. It is knowing God, not by sight, but by our whole beings. Have you been to a circus before? Any of you? Yeah? Only Chua? Yes, thank you. Yeah. You know, a few days ago, I don't know how many of you have seen Curious, Cirque, no? A few days ago, my partner told me that Curious by Cirque du Soleil was having a special sale for National Day, right? They were having all kinds of special sales for National Day, right? And the tickets were being sold at a very special price for a very limited time. So my partner has never been to a circus before, so we decided to try and get the tickets. One of the central acts in any circus, yes, thank you, Raymond, is the flying trapeze, right? Most circuses have this. And we might think that the flyer is the star of the trapeze, right? The one who flies into the air and jumps and poof. But if you were to ask any of the great flyers in any circus, they'll tell you the real star is the catcher. They'll tell you that the secret is that the flyer does nothing, well, not completely nothing, but compared to the catcher, they do nothing, and the catcher does everything. When they fly to the catcher, all they have to do is to simply stretch out their arms, their hands, and they wait for the catcher to catch them. And that's why even amateurs like you and me can try out flying in a flying trapeze experiential course, right? Have you seen some of those? Right, they hang you up there, they kind of give you a safety belt and go, go! Right, and then the catcher catches you and you're like, yeah! Right? You see, so any of us could kind of try it out and be a flyer, We just need to stretch out our hands and our arms. But you need a seasoned and experienced catcher to make sure that you're properly caught and not left dangling in the air or falling, right, from the air. And the worst thing that the flyer can do is to try to catch the catcher. Can you imagine? Like, ah! If you're the flyer, you're not supposed to catch the catcher. It's the catcher's task to catch you. You just relax, stretch out, and wait to be caught. And you know, it's the same with God. When troubles come in our lives, we often try to grab onto God, right? We scramble, we panic, we're anxious. We think if we can do enough praying, we can grab onto God, we can catch God. But it's not actually our job to catch God. God catches us. God already holds us. And what we need to do is to let go, relax, and fly with our hands and arms stretched out and reach out. And God catches you. God already holds you, and we are already in God. And much as it is scary, we can trust that God catches us. But how can we trust when we can't know for sure? That's hard, right? I mean, it's dark and we're swinging out there and we don't know for sure if God's going to catch us. Next slide. You know, Jesus often said this, "Your faith has saved you." Do you know why Jesus says this? Why? Why your faith has saved you? Because wisdom, love, or further growth will not go deeper without another opening up of ourselves or letting go. For some reason, this is a lesson that we have to keep learning and learning again and again in our lives. We have to keep reopening up ourselves, retrusting, re-letting go, re-reaching out. When we look back at the path behind us, if you look back on your lives, we can often see clearly how God caught or carried us, right? It's usually clearer on hindsight. But when we look ahead, we look at the path ahead of us, it's often still dark. And uncertainty requires us to let go and open up ourselves to vulnerability, to risk, to fear, and that's hard. Because that requires faith and courage. To exercise such faith and courage, I feel, requires us to know God on a day-to-day basis. Not just knowledge of God, but to know God on a day-to-day basis. In my own faith journey, I've come to realize more and more that it's not how much I know about God, although that's important. It's not how intimate my relationship with God was 10 years ago. It's about the here and now. How am I intentionally carving out time and space, day by day, moment by moment, to be with God, to listen to what God may be saying, to sense how God is moving within me? I just wanted to try a short exercise with you this morning. And this is suggested by Richard Rohr. I don't know where you are in your lives right now. I don't know if you're struggling with something very difficult. I don't know if you have questions. I don't know if you are angry with God. I don't know where you are. But wherever you are, I wanted to invite you to just try this exercise with me. Think about one challenging issue that you're struggling with in your life. And if it helps, you can close your eyes. It's okay. No judgment, okay? Think about one challenging issue that you're struggling with in your life. Acknowledge two or more possible outcomes or realities. Try to not take sides, but hold the pain of contradictions and seeming impossibilities. Notice where this tension appears in your body. Observe it with tenderness and send warmth and love to that place. Ask God to hold you, since you cannot hold yourself. How did that feel? If you found that helpful in some way, I want to encourage you to continue cultivating spiritual practices in your daily life. Practices such as contemplative prayer that emphasize being with God. For some of us, we're going through very challenging situations, and perhaps being with God is not enough. We need to lament at God. And I think there's a reason why there's a whole book in the Bible called Lamentations. I think we don't lament enough, maybe. For some reason, Christians tend to think that if I'm supposed to be faithful, I have faith, it means an unwavering belief, never doubting, always trusting. No matter how awful or terrible things are, I believe, I trust. We think that if one has faith, it means never having negative feelings about God, and certainly never wondering if God even exists. But look at the characters in that list in Hebrews 11. Almost all of them doubted God at some point. They wrestled with God. They lamented at God. They complained at God. And I think that's an awesome tradition in the Bible. To see people complaining to God, lamenting at God. Susan, one of our members, once said, "We should come together to celebrate and worship." Yes. But we should also come together to grieve and lament. And she's right. Because truly having a relationship with God means we struggle and we wrestle with God. And hopefully we can do that together as a community. See how many characters in the Bible confront God and argue with God. They complained when they felt that God was neglectful, unfair, or absent. Their complaints were not a sign of faithlessness. It's the opposite, actually. Their complaints and their questions to God were a sign that they were in relationship with God. They were in a tussle with God. And this leads me to a question that I wanted to ask you this morning. In your journey of faith, are you a tourist or a pilgrim? If you go to the next slide. Hebrews 11 talks about how the people confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. That's verse 13. Not because they considered earthly life irrelevant compared to heaven, but because they were seeking a homeland. They knew that this was not their ultimate home. They were strangers on earth, and they desired a better country. And those of us who see our lives on earth as a brief visit are tourists. And those who are seeking to build the kingdom of God in our brief time here are pilgrims. And I wanted to ask, which are you? And following are some thoughts that I'm adapting from this person called Morgan Geaton. Instead, to make it a little bit simpler, tourists are taking some time off, while pilgrims are starting a new life. Many people are traveling over this long weekend, right? And many of you have had experiences as a tourist. What do you do as a tourist? When you travel as a tourist, the idea is to probably take some time out of your busy and hectic schedule. You go off somewhere, take some time off. Hopefully, you come back to your busy life refreshed, but basically unchanged, right? You're taking a break, but unchanged. When you travel as a pilgrim, when you journey as a pilgrim, what you are seeking is an entirely new life. Hebrews 11 verse 9 talks about Abraham. It says, by faith he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. And so he was moving along, but starting a new life completely. Number two, tourists make chit-chat, right? And pilgrims make siblings for life, or at least we hope. When you're traveling with a tourist group, how many of you have traveled with a group before? That's not very common nowadays, but some of us still have, right? Your hope is to make the trip as pleasant as possible, right? 5 days, 10 days, 20 days. Let's all survive this. Last year we had this group to Israel, right? We survived it, right? Quite well, actually, amazingly. But when you're traveling with a group, you want to make it as pleasant as possible, right? You make light banter and chit-chat with people. But you're going to try your hardest to avoid difficult conversations, conflict. Huh? They will make anything unpleasant, right? They were all experts at being nice on a tour group. But when we're building community, we need to be intentional in creating space where true relationships can form. And this is not easy. Because many of us are introverted, it's true. We're not just shallow. I mean, a lot of us are introverted. It's very hard to break into, right, different groups of people and try to make friends, right? And it also takes time and effort and trust to work through the disagreements and conflicts that will inevitably occur when people come together. When you truly do life together, that's going to happen. And it's going to take time and effort and extraordinary trust to continue working on it. And we need a space where we can be vulnerable enough with our traveling companions, our fellow pilgrims, that we can truly be the siblings that Christ has called us to be. Three, tourists pay for services, while pilgrims share each other's burdens and joys. When you're tourists, we naturally pay for services. You get someone else to carry your luggage and you pay them. You pay someone to transport you to bring you to a scenic spot. And in a church environment, when we say someone's a tourist, we're saying the person puts money in the offering bag as a payment for service. To sing some heartwarming songs, maybe listening to an encouraging or inspiring message, that offer them a brief 1 hour vacation from their lives. To be a pilgrim means that you consolidate your resources with other pilgrims. You share the responsibility of carrying each other's burdens and joys. And so if you've been attending a church for a long time, not just this church, any church, if you have not been involved in any of its community or ministry activities, then we are more like a tourist than a pilgrim. So it's something for us to think about. Fourthly, tourists want to know the future, and pilgrims have to trust God to lead them. I don't know how many of you are planners, like super like planners, right? But when you're a tourist, you often want an itinerary. Even if you're not a planner, you want to know what's going to happen tomorrow. Where are we going? What are we eating? Are we going shopping? Are we going to see anything nice? What photos am I going to be able to take? Right? We want to know everything. Right? You want to know how much money you're going to be spending, what you'll be doing, is it worth the money you'll be spending? If something unexpected happens, we will ask for a refund, right? Natural. In contrast, Abraham set out not knowing where he was going. To be a pilgrim doesn't mean being flippant about the future or not caring about the future. It doesn't mean we don't plan. It just means that we're willing to adapt and to take things a step at a time, even though we don't know the whole plan. A pilgrim plans for the journey, but a pilgrim is not anxious about the future because they trust that God will walk with them. So whether you're a tourist or a pilgrim, the reality is that we are all strangers and foreigners on this earth. Yes, we have a temporary home here, but as Hebrews 11, verse 13 and 16 says, all of these, meaning all of these people that we're talking about, died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. Can you imagine what that is like? Basically, we live, we die without seeing the fulfillment of all of God's promises. And we see a glimpse of it, a little bit. You see parts of it coming up. We don't see the whole thing, and then we die. And that's what happened to a lot of the people of faith. And so they confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For people who speak in this way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they have been thinking of the land that they had left behind, they could have just gone back. But as it is, they desire a better country, a heavenly one. If you have ever wondered why it's so difficult to find a sense of true home on some corner of this earth, it's because we are never truly home until we are in the arms of God. This was true of the many people before us, and this is true of us now. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the song Blessings by Laura Story. And part of the lyrics go like this. Because what if your blessings come through raindrops? What if your healing comes through tears? What if 1,000 sleepless nights are what it takes to know you're near? What if trials of this life are your mercies in disguise? What if my greatest disappointments or the aching of this life is the revealing of a greater thirst this world can't satisfy? This song was written out of a very difficult experience that Laura and her husband went through. In 2006, when they were still newlyweds, a brain tumor hospitalized her husband. And at one point, they thought he was going to die, and he was just being kept alive by breathing machines. He managed to survive, though, but suffered significant post-operative vision and memory loss. And the unexpected episodes of fear and loneliness helped her to view God's blessings in a unique way. In an interview, Laura Story explains the writing behind the song. She said, "The song shows that we still have more questions than answers. What does it look like when I spend years praying for healing for my husband that never comes? I feel like we've gotten to a place of having to make a choice. Are we going to judge God based on our circumstances that we don't understand? Or are we going to choose to judge our circumstances based on what we hold to be true of God? I'm learning that every morning when I wake up, to choose to trust God. And that's what blessings is about. It's just considering maybe the blessing is actually found in the absence of the thing that I'm praying for. Maybe the blessing is actually found in the absence of the thing I'm praying for." Faith is a longing for home. If you go to the next slide. Because deep inside, we know that we are not there yet. Earlier on, we sang about a God who is faithful through the ages, the one who is our light, our eyes, our strength, our healing, our peace, the one who calls us each by name and who will bring us home. We know God is faithful. How are you doing on your faith journey? Let me share with you one way we can assess how we are doing on our own journeys of faith. One of the other lectionary passages for this week echoes what Miak preached on last week. It comes from Luke chapter 12, verse 34. It says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And another version goes, the place where your treasure is the place you will most want to be and end up being. Where is your treasure? And where is the place you most want to be? To put it another way, what do you treasure in your life right now? And one way to know is to ask ourselves, what do we spend our time, money, and energy on? Because that's probably where our hearts are. And that is also where you are on your journey of faith. Are you happy and fulfilled where you are on your journey? Are you where you want to be? If you are, then I'm happy for you. But if you're not, then what needs to change? What needs to change? What do you want to put your time, your money, your energy on? What do you truly treasure? Is it relationships, time with God, your family, loved ones, the people on God's heart, the despised, the least, the suffering? God is our light, our eyes, our strength, our healing, our peace. The one who calls us each by name and will bring us home. And in this interim period we have on earth, in this short, brief moment we have on earth, let's make the most of the time we have left and live out lives of faith that show the one whom we know and follow.